Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The American economy, watching the Federal Reserve this last year as it accelerated its rate hikes in order to contain, we're told, price instability, a.k.a. inflation. With a target of 2%, we're very far from 2%. And yet, the last meeting of the Federal Reserve, and since then, the word pause dominates the conversation on Wall Street and in the American marketplace. Pause. What does it mean? What does it mean for all of us? Because the 2% target is somewhere in the distance. And no longer hiking rates, does that move us closer to the target? Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, who's written about this topic many, many times, monetary policy, will help me understand this extremely puzzling word, pause. Joe, pause means that you've put the VCR or the screen or the podcast on pause, but you're going to run a return to it to finish the story. Is that what pause is supposed to mean? Not the end, but in fact, we're going to do it again, but not tell you when.
Well, it's for exactly that reason, John, it actually is a little difficult to know what people mean when they talk about a pause. I mean, in this context, the hope is that the Fed is actually done, that they've hit the stop button on any further increases in interest rates and will, you know, potentially hold rates where they are for a few months and then start cutting again as we get into the autumn or early next year. The hope, people hope this because it is becoming clear that the Fed's rising interest rates were creating more and more stress in the financial system. And so people want the pain to end. And they are hoping, maybe realistically, maybe not, that if the Fed eases up now and kind of leaves rates steady for a while, it will be possible for people to digest rates at their current level without, you know, doing any more damage to the financial system of the sort that we saw with Silicon Valley Bank and some of the others. That is the hope. And the Fed's justification for doing this, despite the fact that inflation remains so far above their 2% target, would be that they would want to argue that they now believe that the policies that they have implemented, all of these rate rises, will be enough to bring inflation down, but it's just going to take a while because their rate increases always operate with a lag. Now, how you can know any of this is sort of a mystery, and don't ask the Fed to tell you because they will struggle to explain what the theoretical justification for all of this is. But I think the reality is that they're going to be very nervous moving forward about doing anything that will unnecessarily spook markets, who are clearly expecting that they are done raising rates now. And the Fed also is going to be wary of doing any further rate increases that might increase the strain on the financial system.
My general understanding is that the Fed would be helped in its ambition of 2% by a recession. Does the Fed want a recession? Is that why it will raise rates again, to push unemployment into the negative and to put GDP under one, under zero?
Well, their models tell them that they might need a slowdown of some sort in order to get inflation under control. They think that they need to pull down on employment so that you would have a higher unemployment rate, or that they need GDP growth to slow down in some way. Now, this is suspect, I think, because there are a lot of historical examples of the opposite. You know, times when the Fed was confused that inflation was low, even though We had a lot of employment and the economy was growing at a healthy clip. There have been other times the Fed was confused that inflation was high when unemployment also was high and the economy seemed to be, you know, grinding to a halt. You would think that that would make them wonder if their models are actually correct. They don't seem to worry that much about that. And so they will believe that their policies are working if they start to see some of these negative changes in the economy, which I should point out is a risk for the rest of us, because history suggests that we could end up getting both the high inflation still and also the slower economic growth and the higher unemployment.
We'll leave the story of pause because right now there is news around us about something that really isn't about the Federal Reserve, except for the fact that it's going to affect confidence in the U.S. Treasury, which is Treasury bonds, but also the whole idea of the U.S. government being stable. It's having to do with something that is mysterious to me called the debt limit or debt ceiling. The headline in the Wall Street Journal: GOP Democrats draw red lines about the debt limit or debt ceiling. Joe, I've not paid much attention to this over the years because it comes back every 2 years and there's a lot of hemming and hawing in Washington. And 1 year, I remember famously, they closed the national parks and people were discomfited by this, saving money, I guess, by not allowing people to wander around and look for Yogi Bear. But in any event, They're at it again, and I can't understand what the struggle is. The term red lines in the headline suggests that both sides are taking partisan positions. Does it help them, Joe?
I'm not sure that this is going to help the Democrats as much as they think it will, and I think that there is a chance that this situation could end up helping Republicans more than people think it will. So, I mean, remember, the argument here is that the amount of money that the federal government can borrow is capped by the debt ceiling. And we are expecting to hit that ceiling at some point in very early June, the Treasury Department has said, after which the government is only going to be able to fund its spending out of whatever current revenues it has coming in. And the thing that people are most concerned about here is that if Treasury does not prioritize repaying interest on the existing debt out of those revenues at the expense of any other expenditure, that could trigger a default, and no one knows what the consequences of that might be, and we should not be eager to find out. But I think that the political thing that is different this time compared to previous episodes where the ceiling was in question is the Republicans have managed to organize themselves behind a strategy where they are saying to Democrats in the Senate and saying to the White House, okay, we will increase the debt ceiling, but in exchange for some reductions over the next few years in discretionary spending. And the Democrats are resisting that. They want what is called a clean increase in the debt limit that would not have any of these restrictions on it. But the fact, there are two facts. One is that the Republicans have actually organized themselves to pass a bill in the House, and the Democrats haven't been able to get organized to pass anything. So that already makes the Democrats look a bit less responsible here. I think Democrats also are going to run into the problem that if this doesn't get resolved, so that there is the danger of default, the reality is that Joe Biden is the president. And so he will get blamed for whatever happens as a consequence of that. So I think that this kind of fight is not new. We've had them every few years. But I think the contours of this one are different from previous bouts in some interesting ways.
The Republican plan includes, I'm certain, unless they've taken it out by now, reducing the spending by, I think it was either 60 or 80 billion. Which sounds like a lot of money, but these days they throw around the trillion word, 60 or 80 billion of leftover money from the COVID crisis that wasn't spent. And the White House didn't go along with it. So there's more here than just numbers. There's ideology, too. why not save yourself all that grief by just saying, we didn't spend it for the COVID, so therefore we're not going to spend it for something new? What's the hesitation, Joe?
Well, I think that part of it is the political strategy on the left, which has basically been to try to stretch out the sweater at every opportunity. So, you know, what they hope is that when they pass these bills, sort of like, you know, you wear a sweater too often and it kind of starts losing its shape and, you know, expands a bit, and then you never quite get it down to size again. You know, they have hoped that every time they passed one of these bills, the public would get used to the idea of it, and then that money would always be there. The sweater would always be that big the next time they wanted to pass a budget or a spending bill of some sort. People would be accustomed to throwing those amounts of money around. So I think if that is your strategy, then it does start to look very threatening to have this political dynamic where actually you might find a way that you can shrink the sweater a little bit. You know, and it reveals that maybe the public, the electorate, is not as comfortable with that spending as you thought they were. And if you cut the spending, that means that then you're going to have another big fight the next time you want to increase it again.
Janet Yellen says such and such a date, but I remember clearly the last time we went through this, that date is arbitrary, very questionable entirely, because they can and can't pay on new revenues, on revenues that they can move around. So this will be resolved. And when it is resolved, you believe in this instance, it will redound to the president's credit that it's resolved, because he stands to lose more if it's not? Is that your reasoning, Joe?
Well, I think that Republicans stand to gain from the situation just by showing that they can actually stand firm. I mean, one of the things that I think has surprised Democrats and explains some of the political miscalculations they've made here is that House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's election a few months ago was so chaotic and Republicans seem to be so divided on this issue that it's been a real surprise that they've shown that they could coalesce and all agree behind a strategy here. And so I think if the Republicans can stick to that, they potentially end up looking like the winners from a resolution here, especially if by sticking to that when the Democrats apparently don't have a plan, House Republicans get to dictate some of the shape of what the resolution will look like.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of The Wall Street Journal, helping me understand what my brain still doesn't entirely understand, the debt ceiling. But we're going to go to something that's even more challenging, something called Eurovision. It just happened. Germany's threatening to leave the contest. Britain is commenting that it ought to get out as well because it's tilted against it. We think there's a war in Europe. This is a war of words over Eurovision.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. You know that moment when you're in your stylist chair and you're describing your dream hair like it's a Pinterest board come to life, but you have zero idea how to make it happen at home? That is my Roman Empire. But Amiga totally gets it. Their clean, vegan, cruelty-free, clinically proven formulas are why stylists swear by them. I'm obsessed with the Wizard Detangling Primer. It's like a magic spell for my hair. For a limited time, save 15% off your order with code FAMOUS15 on loveamika.com. Restrictions may apply.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away. all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.